Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
Let's talk about this. Over half of us suffer with depression at some point in life. For some, it is a very difficult period that they can recover from. Now, for others, it is a daily situation of just trying to manage symptoms the best way that they can. We talked about World Mental Health Day on Tuesday, and to coincide with it, AWARE are running an awareness week to try to explain how depression can impact people. Two of those people are David and Brianna, who are here with me in studio. Thanks, lads, for coming in.
Hi there.
You're very welcome to the show. How's it going?
Thank you, Brianna.
David, let's start with you for a second, okay? Can you tell me, when did you realise that you had mental health problems?
Yes, quite. I'll try and bullet point it. It could take a while. But
do you remember the age you were?
Yeah, through my teens.
Okay.
Yeah, probably late teens, I think. So I know it's a difficult period because you're going through a lot of change anyway. Mm-hmm. You're making that kind of transition from school into college and that. But like, look, a big thing for me was just I was bullied. I got picked on. And for me, I felt a little bit different because you were being judged based on your physical appearance. So I think automatically that kind of puts you out, it sidelines you a bit because mm-hmm. you're looking at other people and looking at yourself. And straight away, at a young age, you're making this comparison. So that that quite a damaging effect on me. What I will say is there was a bit of a residue with it because I didn't realise it at the time. It was maybe only kind of 4 or 5 years later, as I got into my early 20s, you were looking back thinking, well, actually, hang on a second.
I'm still feeling that.
Why am I still feeling like this? Because of stuff that was said to me when I was 14, 15. And I think a lot of it then at that stage is just pressure that you put on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need anyone else to put that pressure on you because you're so consumed by, oh, listen, I need to make up for what I wasn't when I was 14 or 15. I need to be better. I need to do this, that and the other. And yeah, look, that's something that's very brief, Jen, but that's kind of
would you say
where it started.
Would you say it was a trigger to something that maybe was there or an instigator? Or can you describe how you were feeling at the time? Can you describe, like, for anyone listening who has not experienced it, okay? And like I said in the intro, over half of us will suffer with depression at some stage in our life. But for anyone listening who has not experienced it, how would you describe the experience as being like?
Isolated.
Okay.
I think is probably, if you were to put it down to a single word. You wear the mask. You go out, you put the big smile on, you're mixing with your friends, everything's great, you're involved in football. But behind all that, you're like, right, this isn't really great. But I'm careful how I say this and articulate this, because you don't want to trigger people. Like, but there's different ways these things get inflicted on you. And I think for me, like, it was very psychological. Like, I kept a diary and I gave it a name. I go back to this a lot. Like, I called it the hate pages.
Mm-hmm.
And it was there for me to write about everything that was wrong about me. And like, I took so much pride and put so much effort into that. Like, and it was a relief. But when I look at it now, it was like, oh my God, like that's not a very kind of productive way to sort of deal with your pain. But
you probably didn't know how to deal with your pain.
No, I didn't know how to. And especially back then, look, I'm nearly 40 now. You're going back nearly 20 years. It was a totally different landscape. Totally different. But look, I would have had a reputation of being a bit moody and a bit, you know, geez, oh, your man's at it again. Like, but look, I look at it now and kind of say, okay, it was all part of a process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a very damaging way of going about things. But you sort of look at it and think, well, maybe if I didn't go through it, I wouldn't be where I'm at now, in a better place of knowing how to handle those things. Like, so
how did you take steps to get the help you needed?
Yeah, so I worked in a bank, right? Back in 2007. Do you remember it all went?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was my fault. It was a very difficult time to be working in a bank. But like, that was, oh my God, it was horrific. It was, for someone who was low in confidence and very unsure of myself, it wasn't the right environment for me. But I always remember kind of how I dealt with people and how I how I was kind of known as being polite, and you take a bit of pride in that and the way you were raised and everything, like, but mm-hmm. I always remember, like, just that chipping away with me day after day. It's so mundane, and you're just eating away. And I remember one stage a gentleman came into the bank and he asked me, he was like, it's like, I'm in the right place to cash a cheque. And I looked at him and I said, yeah, you're in an effing bank, of course you are. And like the moment I said it, I was like, oh my God.
Where,
like,
did that come
I was
from?
Mortified. Like, I was so ashamed. And that culminating with everything else that was going on, everything else I was dealing with over the course of 10 or so years, to a point where, like, I just didn't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember saying, right, I need to get a bit of help here. And I remember Googling and looking up on the laptop, like, what do you do if you're feeling like this? And it's funny looking at this now, right? Because I was Googling symptoms of depression, ticking off a list. And then I'm looking over my shoulder to make sure no one can see the computer. You know, it was like deleting my history. When I think about it now, it's like you're looking at something untoward. Like, mm-hmm. But that was kind of the... You know, the shame almost. It was like,
do you think
I can't
that stopped you from getting help?
I organised, right? So it would have been late 20s. And I remember saying, right, organise a counselling session, I'll go and do this. And I got to the gate. I had it booked and I got to the gate and I turned away. And it was just, the relief of that. I was like, and then you start fooling yourself. You're like, oh, well, I didn't need that. I'm grand, you know. But of course, the cycle starts again. And I remember eventually I got to a point like, I ended up going away. I went away to Spain and I dressed it up as this, I have this great footballing job. I'm going to do coaching on my own. I'm living the dream. And I went over and I wasn't living the dream. I was living my nightmare. I was running away. I went to the coaching sessions, I think, twice. And I remember it was the 2010, Spain won the World Cup. So you can imagine what it was like in Spain, the colour, the noise. And like I was just sitting there, black and white, and went back to my room. And that's the first time in my life I was like, I don't want to be here. I want to end my life. And it was weird. I was just edgy, agitated, moving things around. Didn't know what to do. And it was a really strange intervention because I was in a hostel and the owner of the hostel came in. And it's weird. I've been there like a week and she'd never come near me. And it was really strange. She kind of came in. She knocked on the door. She was like, everything all right? And I burst out into tears. I was like, I didn't even know this woman. And like I spilled everything out, like, but she was lovely. She was a real mammy, you know. She was like, look, you need to get yourself home, like. So look, from that point out, I've just tried since then. That was 2010. I've had two breakdowns since.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very open about, right, if I need to get help, I'll go and get it.
You've come a long way.
I'm still going. Still trying, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm conscious, Jen, look, I'm giving you little snippets of it. 25-year mm-hmm. story there, you know, you're trying to get what's relevant out there, like. But look, I think definitely now, as I said, the horizon is very different. I think, I don't want to say you can talk with pride about what you're going through, but I'd certainly talk now with no fear. I'd certainly think there's a power in vulnerability, without a doubt. And there's definitely no shame in being open about what you've been through, because life is fucking hard, like, yeah. You know, it's tough going, like. So
it's, you're absolutely right, it is tough, and talking is key. And I know you have a very loving family around you, and sign of the times back then, you felt that maybe I can't talk to them. And it's just funny that stranger coming into your room and asking you, are you okay, was the point where you just let it all out. You know what I mean?
And it's funny because when you say that, and everything I was going through, like, even though I was growing up at that stage, really, yeah, in my 20s, but I remember then thinking, like, we need to go home to me ma.
Yeah.
You know, it's such that Irish thing, yeah, isn't it? Like, I need to go home to me ma, like, and you know, whether,
and sort this out. And it's funny when you say it and deal with it. Because, like, you had this big job and football. I know you're very passionate about football and all that, but that doesn't fix what's going on inside.
No.
You have to deal with that head on. Tell us about some of the physical challenges you've taken on.
Yeah, drag this. This gets dragged up. yeah, so look, as you say, I've always been involved in sports. I'm very lucky, like, to have a career in football and coaching. Mm-hmm. Very blessed, and it's been a massive part of who I am. And I think one thing I've tried to do in terms of dealing with what I deal with is utilise the capability of what I can do with my body. So I love running, and over the past couple of years I've undertaken a couple of different challenges for the wear. So probably the biggest one, we ran 10 marathons in 10 days on a running track.
In 10 days?
In 10 days, yeah. So 260 miles on a running track. Yeah, pretty insane.
But that was, is incredible.
Yeah, there was a bit of meaning to it. Like, there was logic in the madness.
Yeah.
I like to try and tell people that. Like, but look, I to say, like, we're talking about it, the whole thing was, it was like, look, you're going around on this loop. It's never ending. It's monotonous. It's quite painful. And you're sort of representing what depression is like. Mm-hmm. But like I kept saying, I was like, look, I get the right people around me, have that right focus and the right mindset, I'll get through this. And what transpired, like, no joke, it was the most incredible 10 days of my life. Like, and that was made by people. It was people made that. It wasn't me running around like an idiot around a track. It was the people that showed up. The energy, the connection, the community, everything I'd probably isolated myself from when I was in that really bad patch. Mm-hmm. So my dad was saying, I thought, he said, look, field of dreams, you know, if you build it, they will come. Like, and it was nuts. Like, every time you were coming around, like, you're like, bleeding ex-girlfriends and all coming up. It was like, my God. So it was, it was incredible. And look, the big thing when you're pushing yourself into something like that, I know it's, again, this day and age, you're seeing stuff on social media and you're like, well, I can do that as well. The biggest thing when I'm trying to do things like this is have a meaning behind it. Make sure there's a bit of substance, that's something that's special. So I knew,
keep with those that, legs going.
Yeah, with that loop and what it was for. I was like, you know, you're not just doing this for a couple of thumbs ups or whatever. There was something really deep and soulful behind it. So yeah, it was special. It raised a lot of money and kicked us on to a few other crazy adventures as well. Like, so it's, yeah, it's fun.
It's amazing what you've done. Just lastly, David, you've worked with your doctor to try to come off the medication. How is that going? And how do you monitor that?
Oh my God, that was, I'm not going to lie, that was hard.
Really?
Yeah. So I was on, I had a period of 3 years of medication. And again, great for the time I needed it.
Yeah.
Probably like a lot of people, I got through the year of COVID, I got to about September and I was just gone, like, which I thought I did well, like, when did that start? Mm-hmm. February to September was a good run, like, but at that stage I could feel the dip again. I was like, right, we'll give this a go. And I'm going to be honest with you, my fear with it was a side effect is weight gain. And I'm so conscious about my body, it was a massive, I was like, I don't know if I can do this. But again, you're weighing up risk and reward. I was like, right, look, if I keep me good habits and try my best to look after myself, this shouldn't be an issue. But I just sort of felt then, after the period of 2-3 years, like, I had this kind of sleep inertia. It was like you were getting up, I was just so drained. And I felt that was playing a part. And I was like, okay, it served its purpose. I feel in a better place. I'll try and ease off on this. It was hard, I have to say. It was, Jesus, you literally go through every emotion, kind of weaning off things like that. Mm-hmm. But again, I know, like, say this time next year or whenever it may be, if I need to go down that path again, I feel I'd be more confident and more comfortable saying, right, you know, talking to my GP and saying I maybe need to go back.
So working very closely with your GP is key, I'd say,
Yeah, like I think there is a difference maybe talking to a counsellor and your GP. There's obviously a lot of history there. Like, but, and I have to say, in fairness to me, doctor, when I went up, it's weird because having been to counsellors and everything else, I'd never actually spoken to me doctor about the situation. So when I spoke to him, like I felt a bit like I'm in the principal's office here. Like, he's like, you're coming to me for 20 years with asthma and now you're throwing this at me, you know. But I have to say, he was actually great. I remember he kind of kicked the chair back, he opened up and he was really clued into it and kind of put me at ease. Like, so that's nice because that's a really big first point. But, or, you know, for anybody looking to if that's the road you want to go down in terms of medication, or if it's something that's suggested to you, or maybe it's a referral to counselling. But just, I think what I would say to people, and again, I'm not an expert, but your GP is there to serve you, to look after your health, whether it's physical or mental. That's what they're there for. They're not going to throw you out of the door, you know, and say, well, sorry, this isn't my baby, good luck. You're paying the money, they're there to help.
Absolutely. Brianna.
Hi.
I'll just take a deep breath now.
You can relax there for a second now, David. You have a little relax there. You're originally from New York, but have lived here now for a few years. Were you kind of hoping to leave depression behind when you moved? David spoke there about moving to Spain and maybe running away from it a little bit. Did you think that was going to work for you coming here?
It's so funny you opened with that, because in New York, I had a lovely job, but I felt very listless. Like, I wasn't really moving anywhere. Mm. And I wasn't moving up in my career at the time. And I had a job interview for a role that I really thought I was going to get. And the hiring manager said, "We really like you, but you kind of remind us of a ship at sea. You're just bobbing along with no sense of direction." And I took that as great advice at first. Like, I really took that on board. And then the more I thought about it, the more it really bothered me. And I felt like I needed to do something to prove that I had an incentive to make a great change in my life. And so that was kind of the impetus for moving to Ireland. So I undertook a master's degree. I quit my job. I wanted to do something that was inherently brave, what I thought brave meant. And so I did. And I am still here. I don't know if it was necessary to leave the difficult things behind. And I quickly found out that they would come with me. You can't just do it. Can't leave it behind. But that's what got me here anyway, was that one comment.
It's interesting. It's one thing I've gotten from the two of you is that unless you talk to someone or deal with it, I mean, they're not, these problems, these issues, they're not going anywhere unless you speak to someone and deal with it head on. Can you describe to me what a difficult day is like for you?
Sure. I think it's changed for me throughout the different stages of my life. We're going to, you know, AWARE's theme this year resonates, because I think back to when I first experienced quote unquote symptoms of depression, which are different for everyone. My father passed away when I was quite young. And for me, that was that pivotal moment that kind of set me apart from everyone else, right? I was the different kid, as you put it, the person who was different. And back then, I didn't want to talk about it. And it was only later during my adolescence that I decided that I'd become a bit more vocal about how I was feeling, and became more of an advocate for mental health awareness. And now, this past year, there's been this huge resurgence of a lot of difficult feelings and depression and awful, crappy things happening, and me trying to figure out how to deal with it. And some days it's a matter of getting out of bed and going to work. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I just can't make it to the office and I invent an excuse and just say that, like, I'm unwell and I have a headache. Or asking my neighbor to grab me some milk just because, like, I don't feel great. And that's the reality of it. Mm-hmm. I'd hesitate to kind of call myself a success story in the same way that others might, because at the moment, I'm still actively having a really hard time.
Mm-hmm. David mentioned there as well, he just wanted his mommy.
Yeah.
Is it more difficult, or would you say, I mean, how are you dealing with it without that family support here?
That's true. And a lot of people say to me, well, why don't you just go home? Mm. And I think that's something universal. Like, wanting your mommy, right?
Yeah.
You want someone.
It's a safety net.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think for me, it's not wanting to give up on the life that I've built for myself here. That's a huge part of it. And I think this year has been a massive exercise in not putting all of my eggs into one basket and trying to find support networks in more than just one place. And so it was, say, my ex-partner. And that relationship, unfortunately, didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And kind of learning that there are other outlets for me beyond the one person, beyond just putting it all on my mother, beyond putting it all on my partner.
Sure.
Putting it all on my therapist, let's say. I think this year is about me finding the tools within myself to know that I'm going to be okay.
Why did you come to Ireland? I have to ask. Like, could you not go to Hawaii or somewhere? You know,
there's Dubai in the summer.
I have to be. I think that's yet to be. I think I genuinely think I was meant to have a challenge, and I think I was.
Oh,
was meant to be
welcome
tested.
To Ireland. Here's your challenge.
I get a lot of criticism for it, and
did
people
you?
Say, "Well, just go home if you're having a tough time here." But I'm not ready to do that.
No. Well, that's. Okay. Well, that's we don't want you to go back. We don't
Thank
want you.
You
to go back. Can you tell me why you feel it's so important to tell your story? and explain to people. It's not an easy fix. And I suppose that is, that question is really important, not just for people, like I said in the introduction, over half of us will suffer with depression. For people around them. You know, this isn't a fix. This isn't a, you go to therapy. Oh, we know now you're in therapy. You're better. Like, it's, you're better now. Is that what you want to say to people, that this is ongoing?
I think a major part of educating oneself is to hear ugly truths.
Yeah.
Or stories from every type of person who's impacted by what is an illness. And for some, those are, that's the ebbs and the flows, I'd like to say. And sitting here listening to David, I'm just inspired and deeply moved by your story. And hope that someday I can come out on the other side. And
he hasn't inspired you to run 10 marathons, so have you? No, geez, he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't do that.
Never have, probably never will. But I think, I guess my style of advocacy rests somewhere between, like, you know, advocating for all of the resources that exist out there, everything that AWARE does, and then also just sharing the truth, what it can be like for a person in day to day. It's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be that storybook, I woke up today and I suddenly was better. I don't think it's like that for anyone, David. I'm assuming it's not like that for you every day.
I heard a wonderful quote I heard a few years ago and it stuck with me. It's like, the truth is a contact sport. And it's really stuck with me and it's so true. Like, it's like there's no full stop here. Mm-hmm. It's like you just have to get up and keep going as best you can.
And sometimes you don't feel like getting up, and then other days are better than the day than others. And but you said it there as well. You said everybody goes through it differently.
Yes.
You know what I mean? No experience is too similar. It's very individual. If anybody is going through or is feeling a bit low or that they might be going through something similar, what would you say to them? What advice would you have?
Sure. Two things chiefly have helped me.
Okay.
Learning with time and grace and practice that it is okay to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
The number of people who have helped me that I never thought would, or that have come out of the woodwork, humbles me to this day. And second, I think remembering the little triumphs. Yeah, they always say, you know, the elephant bite-sized chunks analogy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I look at where I was a year ago or 2 years ago, completely unemployed, having no faith that I was employable in this country, and now I have a job. Don't think about all the unknowns and all the uncertainties. Just think to yourself, what are the facts?
Mm-hmm.
You are employed. You have a roof over your head. You couldn't say that for yourself 2 years ago. And that's okay. And that's where you are right now. Don't set yourself against anyone else's benchmarks. Look at your successes.
And can we talk about a huge triumph for the two of you? Like, little did you know back then when you first asked for help that you'd be on the national airwaves on Thursday, the 12th of October, 2023, talking about your situation and resonating with a lot of people and helping so many people. So I, on behalf of everyone, want to thank you guys for sharing your story and your experience, because I know it's not an easy thing to do. But there is great power in being vulnerable. So thank you both.
Thank you.
Brianna and David, thank you for sharing your experiences of living with depression today. And there is loads more information available at aware.ie/mental health week.
Jen Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.